Welcome to the Haus der Kultur in der Welt, HKW, for the conference Socializing Evidence. For more than a decade, the Nationalist Social Underground, NSU, carried out unprecedented series of murders across Germany. The police and other state institutions searched for the murderers in migrant communities and for a long time refused to acknowledge that the perpetrators were German neo-Nazis. Also, they possessed knowledge about the NSU's activities. One victim of the NSU was Halid Yozgat. He was murdered on the 6th of April 2006 in an internet cafe in Kassel. At the time of the killing, Andreas Temme, an intelligence officer of the Verfassungsschutz of Hessen, was present in the cafe, sitting in the next room. Temme denied being witness to the murder. Commissioned by an alliance of civil society organizations, Forensic Architecture investigated Temme's testimony. Forensic Architecture reconstructed the internet cafe and set up a one-to-one scale physical model at the HKW to reenact Temme's behavior. The model was used to analyze a number of parameters, amongst them the fluid dynamics of the gunpowder smoke diffused in the room. The investigation established that Temme's testimony was very likely false. This case, produced by Forensic Architecture, partly in cooperation with the HKW, gives a perfect example of what it means by socializing evidence. What we experience as reality is normally based on a symbolic construction shared by a community. Ideally, it is the role of the state and its institutions to provide the institutional framework, the rules, the protocols for establishing truth and reality in times of conflict. When state institutions are in crisis, however, when they lose their legitimation and become perpetrators themselves, when fake news and post-truths are spreading, in such times, this role has to be taken over by civil society. Social, political, and legal activists are needed to develop community-based practices which provide the means for new, socially grounded reality constructions. Since we live in a knowledge-driven reality which is permeated by technology to such an extent that some call it technosphere, new forms of knowledge production have to develop involving technological strategies. The fluid dynamics model of the internet cafe serves as a perfect example here. The reenactment of the crime scene demonstrates at the same time that such forms of forensic work are not just analyzing a situation, but reconstructing reality by unfolding its hidden aspects. This calls for aesthetical approaches which allow to sense the multi-layered dimensions of reality. The involvement of the Haus der Kultur in der Welt, HKW, as a cultural institution in Forensic Architecture's work on the Kassel case points to the fact that these new forms of activist work also require new kinds of forums in the art, media, and social tribunals. Today's conference is structured in such a way that these new forms will be addressed in the three sections. Finally, I just want to mention that the collaboration between Forensic Architecture and the HKW already started in 2014 when we presented, with the curatorship of Anselm Franke, the first comprehensive exhibition of their work. Since Forensic Architecture's conceptual approach speaks in many ways to our own work, we are very happy to continue the cooperation in the forthcoming years and to include the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights in these efforts as well. I'm deeply grateful to both institutions and especially to E.R. Weizmann and Wolfgang Kalleck for the initiative to organize this conference and for their continuous engagement in our mutual cooperation. I give the word now to E.R. Weizmann.
Amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel like, with this podium, I feel like I'm meeting an old friend. So first, my first friend here is an object, but it's absolutely wonderful to return here and to meet all the different people and different practitioners that throughout this sort of decade-long experiment that forensic architecture is, have been influential on our work and have taught us the kind of things that I think we're going to be discussing. In my introduction, I'm going to maybe reiterate something of what you said, Bernd, but really inflected through a note of deep gratitude to the Hakave for a long-term and meaningful journey of exploration. And I think that when we started our collaboration back in 2014 with the exhibition Forensis, I didn't really realize that we would embark on a meaningful partnership. I thought we are going to have an opportunity to show our work here, that the institution is going to be a certain echo chamber, a certain receptacle with which we could actually show our work, but has turned into a kind of a journey. And now that your term is nearing to an end, Bernd, I want to, you know, also say a personal thank you to you. So indeed, in 2014, the exhibition Forensis, and this is the catalog of that. In fact, I think that the title came when we met in South Africa in one of the conferences that were organized by Achille Mbembe. So we were discussing that and kind of changed the title of the exhibition to Forensis. It's very rare to say, but I can say that absolutely, you know, truthfully here, that an organization could spring out of a title of an exhibition or out of a, you know, the experiment that an exhibition is. An exhibition could be productive. And I think that is really part of what taught us to think through and with the institutions in which we are collaborating and working with. The idea of the architecture of public truth, I think, was a kind of a proposition. We didn't know exactly what it meant. And I think that we understand today that that architecture is a construction site, that the idea of making an investigation of different kinds of truth practices, practices of open verification, are about making publics and are about making social constructs. And indeed, Forensis, and I'll kind of repeat the proposition that guided that very first exhibition we had here, is somehow to extract the practice, the bureaucratic state policing practice of forensics from the state and turning it against it, undertaking counter-forensic practices. And understanding that, and I'll return to that in the introduction a couple of times, we need to think about forensis, Latin for the art of the form, as addressing different fora. And the minute that it enters, the different kind of practices enters into different forums, those forums also are challenged to transform. It's not simply as if we are putting the same kind of work within the media, within the art sphere, and within the courts. The entry of those practices into each and every of those forums is a call for transformation. And I'm happy to see here the people that, in fact, everybody that we invited here, and I'm grateful that accepted our invitations, that will speak to you here, are people we learned from, and we learned from different things about the potential of the transformative potential of new practices to actually unsettle those forums that hold the kind of the our societal foundation. And I'm very happy that, you know, I've seen just very briefly the new exhibition that you had up on here, Illiberal Arts, because I think that in a time of fascist epistemologies, in a time of like such deep negation, in a time that the kind of conception of the world is under such a strain that we need to kind of think about what is happening to the sort of liberal epistemic order that is held by those institutions. And indeed, fascist epistemologies are challenging the institutions that we are operating within. The response, we are faced with kind of two options of how to respond to those fascist epistemologies. On the one hand, you see people trying to prop up the liberal order. They're trying to keep those foundations of epistemic power, the court system, the police, sometimes even the FBI is kind of called to save us from those kind of challenges that we are facing. But I think an alternative to that is effectively to let go. To let go of an order that perhaps has played its role already, and to try and on the ruins of that liberal epistemic order to find if there are alternatives, to try to see if we can actually organize differently. I think that you hear reflected in what I'm saying, you can think about the challenges that are called sometimes the challenges of post-truth. But I think that anyone that has lived through a colonial situation or participated in an anti-colonial struggle understands that reality has simply become apparent to other people, but it is actually almost synonymous with colonialism that is in itself always a violence against people and things and a violence against a description of the world in which they are happening. So in a sense, in an anti-colonial struggle in Palestine and elsewhere, and in being through that, one understands that effectively it is sometimes the description of the world in which we live, the history that we've experienced, we've struggled to undo, those principles have manifested themselves previously. And so in a sense, what does it mean to actually find an alternative to the institutions that hold the liberal epistemic order? How can we organize differently? I think that the title of the organization, and it's also very interesting for us that it was here in 2014 that the first introduction to ECCHR and to Wolfgang Kallek has taken place, and the first conversations that lasted now for about 7 years, to think about alternative practices, to think about alternative ways of producing evidence, of socializing evidence, presenting it, and ways in which we understand that the court, amongst other institutions of our cultures, need to be effectively challenged as the absolute arbiter of truth, or as that which guarantee any kind of progressive change. So in a sense, I guess that part of what we are trying to discuss here today is how, when I say truth practices, everybody kind of like gets almost like a rush. But I understand that even though the word truth comes from, both a certain kind of transcendent or associated with certain transcendent values. I think that in the same root of that term, in veritas, we can actually find another alternative. So rather than the sort of transcendent notion of truth, that which is given and that which is, available right at hand, ready at hand, we are speaking about a process that we call open verification. A conception of truth as a verb, one that is immanent, one that is based on modeling and contestation, one that is based on wide collaboration amongst a very heterogeneous groups and people. So not as a form of expertise, but as a form of producing the kind of social relations that can buttress those claims that we are making. But verification is imminent. Verification is something that continuously could change, continuously integrate a polyperspectival reality and adapt to it. This is one of the works that we've done together with ECCHR, based on the conception that I am describing to you today, a work that is relevant to show today almost because it is speaking about a drone strike in Pakistan in which German technology and German state institutions were involved. A drone strikes that we were able to expose and reconstruct using techniques of memory reconstruction that in which architectural modeling, a very patient work with a German woman who experienced and was a victim to that process and that had, like many other victims, difficulty of remembering the core of of what has happened to her, building very slowly an architectural construct allowed that recollection to be pieced together. I want to show you another video right now, which is coming from Palestine, from exactly that anti-colonial struggle that I was referencing before. I'm going to show it, it's about a minute and a half, and I'm going to speak about what I think it means and how it actually shows some of the principle that we're discussing today. Oh, sound? Sound? No sound. Okay. No. Here it's not muted. Here it's fine. Okay. What you would have heard here is... It's okay. I'll skip that. What you would have heard here is the Israeli police raiding a Bedouin Palestinian village in the south, in the Nakab Desert. And you would hear several things. You would hear, firstly, the backdrop, the sound backdrop of that video is a continuous beep, a continuous car horn that is... That is kind of like the soundtrack of this entire sequence of videos. A man has been murdered. A Bedouin Palestinian teacher has been murdered here. His body is on the is in the car, and the car horn continuously honk. People, a coalition of people, is trying to get into and close to that sound. They're trying to get closer and closer to it. And the video that you would have heard is recording very little vision. It's a very dark night. There are a lot of lights around. But what it records is the sound of the witness as she tries to get close to the car. Every video records from both ends. They record the reality that they're pointed at, and they record the person, the witness, that is actually activating and is behind the camera. She's being beaten, she's been cursed, she's been pushed, as the police is actually trying to create a cordon around that site of that murder. And that actually comes to describe the three basic terms and the three basic problems that counter-investigations have to face. Forensic practices, or forensics, operates within three main spaces. One, the first is the scene of the crime. And the scene of the crime, a site of murder, is also becoming like a state zone. Immediately when it happened, a cordon comes up. Here there is no police tape. The police officers are pushing people around. The state tries to control the site in which its crime has taken place. The second site in which forensics takes place, usually state forensics take place, so you have that kind of site of exception, a state control zone. The second place, the second hermetically closed site, is the lab, where they conduct their own experiments under closed doors. And the third is obviously the court, in which only certain people could enter and only certain things could be voiced. And I think that the principle of the investigative commons is really to think how to break through those three sites. How to get something to leak out of the scene of the crime? What is it that can actually, how to make the cordon porous? How to capture weak signals and work with them? Second, instead of the lab, the idea of the studio, an open collaborative practice that involves initially the survivors of that incident. And involves also the lawyers and activists and experts, and sometimes even, as Bernd has shown before, art and cultural institution, in a very strange diagram of collaboration that is formed around an issue. And the third, in that particular case, is a rejection of the court, which in the situation of Palestine is another site of repression. So you have those things happening in a public domain, and the pushback is rather kind of violent against that. The Israeli police is claiming that the work that has been done is a distortion of evidence, a manipulative edit, and that's the kind of reality that one understands, in which not only a murder has taken place, but the very fabric of facts are being challenged. And I think that moving between different kind of forums, the slippage is not easy, and there's a lot of problem with that. When you choose to show work in places like here, like at the Hakaveh, or in any other art and cultural venue, very often you are faced with claim that this is not an artwork. And you're being challenged about that, sometimes sympathetically, and sometimes, you know, the guardian of sort of like the what an art space should be are contesting that very entry into that space. This is not an artwork, it's evidence. When the same evidence that Bernd was talking about today, an evidence that was produced as a collaboration between filmmakers, activists, family members, the initiative of the unraveling NSU complex is being produced here, and it was brought into a political forum like the Parliamentary Commission of Inquiry into the NSU, those that being accused by it are saying the opposite, are saying this is art, this is not evidence. And to a certain extent, I think it's a problem, but it's also the power of that kind of work, that it does not belong to any of those forms. And in a sense, trying to kind of challenge the meaning of what and who can speak and who can participate in evidence production. That is the idea of socializing evidence, because the more participants existing within that, the more evidence is considered to be contaminated, dirty evidence. But it's that contamination and it's that dirt that make evidence political. Because it's not only about investigating political cases, it's about investigating politically. It's about what kind of community of practice one is able to help or participate in bringing into being to actually sustain those facts. So today we're going to speak about three of those forums that may be mostly associated with our work. The work that we do in the media, in which that practice of open source or open verification is entering sometimes now, and increasingly we see, into also mainstream media. In the time between the exhibition and now, many of the mainstream platforms, including the New York Times and BBC, etc., have adopted the techniques and technologies that we had part in developing and turning it into the mainstream. And this is something that is a problem for us, because we think that the way in which we need to think about alternative ways of approaching and our audience or our readership, we think that the way in which this evidence is produced need to also challenge a certain kind of monopoly on truth productions. In the art spaces, I've spoken about it before, the institution of art and culture that are taking work like ours, but many other practitioners, under now incredible amount of pressure. It's not simply about bringing a work into an art gallery. It's a challenge to what it is. Do we need those spaces? How those spaces, what the relation between viewership, art producers is being done. This is an exhibition that we closed in Manchester because our statement in support of Palestinian resistance to the repression of May 2021 was taken off the wall. And in fact, the exhibition to a certain extent for a period of time migrated into the public domain until our statement was reinstated. What are the alternatives to the court? Here is the Citizen Tribunal unraveling NSU complex. That was organized by that coalition of activists and family members of those victims of the NSU crimes. What cannot be said in court? What are the other institutions that we can participate in their production or in participating in those events in order to articulate things that are outside of the narrow, very linear kind of logic that sometimes court are discussing events of historical significance, reducing them to questions of guilt and innocence of particular individuals. This is what they have to do. But the political implication of that needs other forums in order to exist. So I hope that in this presentation, I kind of taken you through perhaps the questions that we've learned to ask, and we've learned to ask them through collaboration with different practitioners, and you'd meet very different people, all co-travelers, people that we learn from how to think that particular challenge to socializing evidence. Thank you.